Hello. You're listening to the very first episode of Resurfacing. My name is Avalon, and I'll be your guide. Thanks for listening. This is Resurfacing, a music archive podcast. Unsung singers singing truth to power. An artist in episode, anecdotal approaches. Picture yourself sitting in an apartment, Greenwich Village, New York City. The year is 1954. Young people with bohemian sensibilities crowd a dining room. They've heard there will be singing. Suddenly, an unfamiliar face enters the space, awkwardly carrying an acoustic guitar. Her style is distinctly rural, almost church-like. Along with anticipation, a skeptical whisper fills the room. Who is that? And then she plays her song. Her name is Connie Converse.
I'm not too tall, Mom.
In between two tall mountains, there's a place they call Lonesome. Don't see why they call it Lonesome. I'm never lonesome. See that bird sitting on my windowsill? Well, he's saying whippoorwill all the night through. See that brook running by my kitchen door? Well, it couldn't talk no more if it was you. Up that tree, there's sort of a squirrel thing. Sounds just like we did when we were quarreling. In the yard, I keep a pig or two. They drop in for dinner like you used to do. I don't stand in the need of company with everything I see talking like you. Up that tree, there's sort of a squirrel thing. Sounds just like we did when we were quarreling. You may think you left me all alone, but I can hear you talk without a telephone. I don't stand in the need of company with everything I see talking like you. See that bird sitting on my windowsill? Well, he's saying whippoorwill all the night through. Just whippoorwill all the night through. In between two tall mountains, there's a place they call Lonesome. Don't see why they call it Lonesome. I'm never lonesome now I live there.
When did you write that? How did you happen to...
That was Talkin' Like You, or Two Tall Mountains, by Connie Converse. So where do I start? Because I want to give you some context for what you just heard, a sort of periphery overview of the artist's life, which in this case is especially important. But first I want to say this, and it goes for future episodes too. I'm not going to try to attempt to fit a whole person's life into under an hour. It just isn't possible to do justice. So instead I'm going to try to hone in on the things that drew me to this person, to their work and their story, taking a more anecdotal approach to creating a living archive. My hope is that if I can share with you these things as I've experienced them, as well as some of my favorites of what they've created, then you'll be able to get the same sort of feeling that I've gotten from them. That's my only real goal. I've tried to choose artists that I feel have a certain weight to them, and also that you may not be familiar with. There's no genre specificity or limitations, although, if I'm completely honest, I am somewhat partial to folk music as a songwriter myself. So, Connie Converse, born Elizabeth Eaton Converse in 1924, was raised in the small community of Laconia, New Hampshire, USA. The middle child of a strictly religious yet artistic family, with a Baptist minister as father. By all accounts, she was extremely bright and did well in school. She was the valedictorian of her high school and received a full scholarship to the same Massachusetts college that her mother and grandmother had attended. But after 2 years, much to the dismay of her family and shock to her community, she dropped out, eventually moving to New York City to pursue music.
There once was a girl in the olden days, grew weary of men with a roving gaze. Farewell, fickle lovers, goodbye, goodbye, for I'm falling in love with the man in the sky. The man in the sky, he walks in haste with three bright buckles around his waist and a great dog near and a little dog nigh and a steady gleam in his golden eye.
There she lived for a decade, taking on the new name Connie and slowly amassing a 40-song repertoire of originals. But aside from a one-time appearance on a morning TV program in 1954, she and her music remained quite under the radar. Mostly performing at dinner parties for friends and acquaintances, she eventually recorded some demos in a kitchen with Gene Deitch, who I'll come back to later. And those tape reels, along with some of her own home demos, are the only recorded performances we have of her work. In 1961, just as singers like Bob Dylan arrived on the scene, Connie left New York City. Frustrated and discouraged by her music career, she moved to Ann Arbor, Michigan, where her younger brother Philip, a professor at U of Michigan, lived. Most of her family, and especially her father, who I should mention led a state chapter of the Anti-Saloon League, fighting to keep prohibition alive, had come to resent her for her life choices, which by this point included drinking and smoking cigarettes. However, she had maintained a close relationship with Philip, sending him reels of her music while living in New York. He would listen to the songs she would send periodically, calling it the Song of the Month Club. Many of the salvaged recordings of Connie we are left with today were these very reels, which he had held on to for decades.
I'm just a dusty cowhand, a dusty, thirsty soul. I used to keep my money in a pocket with a hole. I've got one ambition, like wishing for the moon, to drink a glass of pleasure for measure, bulging out and brimming over at the Clover Saloon. I was sitting there one evening and feeling out a straight. A fella called me something I particularly hate. I threw a bottle at him, but the fella ducked too soon. That's how I lost my credit at the Clover Saloon. I'm just a dusty cowhand, and brother, I am broke. And brother, I'm so thirsty, I'm going up in smoke. I've got one ambition, like wishing for the moon, to drink a glass of pleasure for measure, bulging out and brimming over at the Clover Saloon. Threw the bottle at him and missed him, like I said. I broke the barroom mirror and left therefore dead. I shot him through the middle to make him change his tune. That's how I lost my prayer. waiting for the worst. They're hanging me tomorrow in the middle of my thirst. I've got one ambition, like wishing for the moon. To drink a glass of pleasure, full measure, bulging out and bring it over at the Clover Saloon.
In Ann Arbor, she changed gears to a more academic and in some sense political life, writing and editing for the Journal of Conflict Resolution, often criticizing the Vietnam War and President Nixon. But as the 1970s rolled around, she began to slip farther and farther into a depression, relying heavily on alcohol and cigarettes as the years passed. At the age of 50, after a stressful trip with her mother to Alaska and the devastating news that she required a hysterectomy, for reasons not fully known to anyone, Connie disappeared. In August of 1974, she left notes for some family members and friends detailing that she wanted and perhaps needed a new life. She packed her Volkswagen Bug, started the engine, and drove away, never to be seen again.
People say a roving woman is likely not to be better than she ought to be. So when I stray away from where I've got to be, someone always takes me home.
What happened to Connie Converse? To this day, her status remains as a missing person. And if she were to still be alive now, in 2018, she would be 94 years old. There were a few leads in her disappearance, however. Her brother Philip was told that the name Elizabeth Converse had been seen in a phone book in either Oklahoma or Kansas, though he can't remember which. But they never followed through. Until 10 years later, the family decided to hire a private detective, but his work on the case would be brief. He explained that in these sorts of cases of voluntary disappearance, it's rare that the person has any desire to be found, and that if found, there's really no ethical way to forcibly bring them home. In the end, the family decided to drop the pursuit, with little hope that she was alive at all. Her brother Philip has mentioned that he believes she may have driven her vehicle into a body of water. He also recalled a memory from childhood that when a friend of hers in grade school had committed suicide, she was much more sympathetic to her decision than the majority of people in their strict Christian community. He recalled, "I remember her saying that the decision to take one's own life was very personal. She very much believed, even back then, that if anything should be left up to a person, it was whether or not to live." End quote.
And I do not go to Mass, but I pray to Father Neptune to let him safely pass.
In one of the letters she left, she wrote, "Let me go. Let me be if I can. Let me not be if I can't. Human society fascinates me and awes me and fills me with grief and joy. I just can't find my place to plug into it."
It goes like this. It's a whole story.
Oh boy.
In one verse and one chorus.
Once there was a trumpeter, blew his love a ballad. That was not enough for her, so he blew her a lobster salad. Blow a little louder, love, show me that you're thinking of your honey. Blow a little louder, love, show me that you love me.
That's the only words I could think.
What Connie's fate was, it appears we shall never truly know. Perhaps she has been living out her days in Oklahoma, or more likely, we lost her more than 40 years ago. It's worth noting that her father passed away, likely never having heard a single one of her songs. Just as her fate remains unknown, so are the reasons. But similarly, a lot can be inferred. Her brother Philip never met or knew of Connie being in any sort of an intimate relationship with another person in her whole life, and later suspected that she may have been gay, but of course those were very different times. Isolation, without a doubt one of the overarching themes of her story, and whether for love in life, for peace in her academic work, or for success in her career, a deep sense of longing is ever present. What we do know is that she left us a great gift, the gift of her music.
We lived alone, my house and I. We had the earth, we had the sky. I had a lamp against the dark, and I was happy as a lark. We lived alone, my house and I. We had the earth, we had the sky. I had a lamp against the dark, and I was happy as a lark. I had a stove and a window screen. I had a table painted green. Sat on a chair with a broken back, wearing a pretty potato sack. I had a rug upon the floor, and roses grew around my door. I had a job, my wants were few. They were until I wanted you. And when I set my eyes on you, nothing else would do, nothing else would do.
So I imagine you may be wondering how the music of Connie Converse has come to be known at all, considering that it was never commercially released, and that the majority of it was simply kept in possession of her brother Philip. Well, that story starts with a person I briefly mentioned before, a man by the name of Gene Deitch. Gene is known for his long career in illustration and animation, working on shows and films such as Tom and Jerry, Monroe, and Popeye. But he had also had his hand in some music recording, notably working with singers such as Pete Seeger and John Lee Hooker. And in the 1950s in New York, Gene and Connie became friends. Quickly, he became one of Connie's most avid supporters, offering to help with the recording of her songs and facilitating her one appearance on television. His voice can be heard at the beginnings and ends of some of the recordings, realized in the kitchen of his Hastings-on-Hudson apartment. However, in 1959, Deitch, whose parents were both Czech, moved along with his company to Prague, where he has been based ever since, and bringing with him many of the Connie Converse recordings. Between those reels and the ones sitting in a filing cabinet in Philip Converse's Michigan home, the song sat, collecting dust for a full 43 years after her departure from New York, and 30 long years after her own disappearance.
Down this road on a Monday morning came a riding three strangers down this road.
It was in 2004 that a shift happened, and slowly, Connie Converse's music began to resurface. Gene Deitch appeared on music historian David Garland's WNYC community radio program called Spinning on Air, where he randomly played a few of the recordings he had done with Connie. Two of the listeners, named Dan DeZula and David Herman, were struck by what they heard. Herman would later say, "What makes her music so haunting and ephemeral is to know that it could have easily been lost forever. It was bizarre to think that this person who lived in New York for 10 years and wrote all these great songs could be completely forgotten. To think that people can exist, yet if no one continues to remember them, after a certain period of time, it's like they never existed at all.
And one end quote. A peacock feather, and one wearing overshoes against the wintry weather.
But fortunately, that would not be Connie's fate. Fast forward to 2009, 5 years later, and the two of them are releasing a compilation of her music on Low Durette Recordings, which later became Squirrel Thing Recordings, re-releasing the album to an even larger audience in 2015. They named the label after the lyric in the first song I played for you today, and the album after this here song, How Sad, How Lovely.
How sad, how lovely, how short, how sweet, to see that sunset at the end of the street, and the day.
The title track from the retrospective album, How Sad, How Lovely. Over the past decade or so, the world has finally been waking up to Connie Converse, and for good reason. After the original release in 2009, David Garland not only ran another hour-long special on WNYC featuring Connie's music accompanied by live readings of some of her goodbye letters, but has also been instrumental in the academic mission to have Connie's music essentially canonized in the American songbook tradition. Some have even gone so far as to say she was the original singer-songwriter. Garland once stated, "Converse wrote and sang back in the 1950s, long before singer-songwriter was a recognized category or style. But everything we value in singer-songwriters today, personal perspective, insight, originality, empathy, intelligence, wry humor, was abundant in her music." End quote. I think that that's a pretty fair take, but to make a claim that she's the original might be a bit overreaching. At the very least, it begs the question of what a singer-songwriter even is. Are we talking specifically about a solo artist? Often. One who writes originals? Likely. And accompanied by an instrument? Perhaps. But it's really a matter of where we draw the line and how specific we decide to make our definition. We could look back through the centuries, millennia really, and examine the cross-cultural traditions of bards from all over the world. Of course, those older traditions that predate audio recording technology have in part been lost to us, and others have luckily been passed down through oral traditions, and in some cases become traditionals, as they're often called. By a more specific definition, I think people often refer to singer-songwriters as those who are not blues or country singers, simply. But then you add folk music into the mix and the lines become blurry again. What is clear is that Connie Converse undoubtedly holds a place in 20th century music history. As a prolific artist and one who both created a large volume of work and who pushed beyond the normalities of her time. It's a shame to wonder what artists in the 40 years period of quietude for her music could have been influenced by it. But there is a new generation of contemporary songwriters who have cited her as an inspiration. Among those artists is Frankie Kosmos.
He was just a dog, now his body's gone. So what is left of me and my poem? I'm just a normal girl, but my name is Frank. I just want to get taken on a date.
Can you hear a similarity in their voices? Or is it perhaps the mood, the personality, or the frankness of the songwriter? Here's another excerpt, this time from another artist, Anna McClelland. Now, before wrapping up, I want to examine a little bit of what makes the songs of Connie Converse ahead of their time, as has often been claimed. Or at the very least, what makes them unique. So, active more in the era of the beatniks, and prior to the rise of 60s folk and protest music, her style was more personal and in some ways less political, at least overtly. For better or worse, in that way, her style is sort of more in line with the tendencies of a lot of contemporary folk. If I had to throw it out there, I think one aspect that makes her music really original, in context, is to do with her sly mockery of traditional womanhood or femininity, as well as her ability and willingness to place herself in others' shoes, including those of men. The only trope of a female musician that she dances around is that of the heartbroken singer. But at the same time, her sadness is much more complex than simply the result of a man leaving her or something along those lines. It often appears something much more profound, a loneliness that is almost chosen. And there's a beauty, a courage in that. She sings of being a dusty cowhand, of living alone with her house, of a man in the sky, and of King Neptune, sometimes transporting us to a different, almost mythical plane of existence, and other times to an intimate portrait of American life. She sings of birds and flowers in such detail that it's almost as if she was able to tap into the experience of those living things, of their very being. I wonder if this is what makes her such a powerful artist. It's her ability to transcend herself while drawing us back to herself through her personality. It's funny, it's serious, it's lovely, it's sad, and everything in between. There's no disconnect, only a string of words unbroken, a poetic path from one place to another and back again. I said it before and I'll say it again. The world is waking up to Connie Converse, and it's for damn good reason. Here's one last song I'll leave you with. It's called I Have Considered the Lilies, and I hope you'll consider them too, just as Connie did.
Well, she has one that she hasn't sung.
Have you?
Well, I'd rather not try that, actually. I haven't tried enough more to do it well.
Why don't you just sing it and we won't record it?
Oh, I can do that.
I'd like to hear it again.
Let's hear how it goes.
This has a biblical text. I have considered the lilies. They never toil, they only bloom. They never feel chilly or tired or silly, and they don't need much room. I have considered the lilies. I have considered how they grow. Tell me how to be a lily, if you know. Oh, lilies toil not, neither do they spin. I'm gonna take my working papers and turn them in. I'm handing over my pencil and pen. I won't be needing my broom again. I'll bloom by day, I'll bloom by night, and blooming will be my delight. Bright tiger lily, still water lily, see how they all dilly-dally. Look at the day lily, lemon lily, calla lily, and the lovely little lilies of the valley. Oh, lilies toil not, neither do they spin. I'm gonna take my working papers and turn them in. To be more splendid than Solomon, I'd walk around wearing the morning sun. The sun by day, the moon by night, and blooming will be my delight. It would be fun, but I'm afraid that I would freeze. King Solomon was not arrayed like one of these. So, I can't afford to dilly-dally. I've got to work for my cotton, work for my denim, linen, and damask and challis. Not like the day lily, lemon lily, calla lily, and the lovely little lilies of the valley. I have considered the lilies. I have considered how they grow. Tell me how to be a lily, if you know.
Yeah.
Thanks again for listening to the very first episode of Resurfacing. This episode was produced in June of 2018 on the island of Montreal, known as Jojake in the language of the Ghanaian Gayaga or Mohawk Indigenous people. My name is Avalon. Thanks again for joining me. So long.